Thank you very much. I want to start with my thanks to Microsoft team here for giving me this opportunity to talk to all of you guys, as well all the viewers who are tuning in to this particular presentation. I'm Sandeep Nawate. I run engineering for Adobe's experience platform. I will be talking about what we're calling unified profile and identity architecture for Adobe's experience platform. There's a lot of work we have done over the last 3-4 years in a fairly large scale system that has been built. And it's heavily using right now Cosmos DB as well as many of the Azure technologies. So I'll be actually walking you through that. The agenda today, I will actually firstly introduce you to Adobe's Experience Cloud, position of experience platform within that. And the next layer down below that is where the profile and identity structures actually emerge, and the importance of these structures in the customer era. As well, actually getting into the architecture, some of the issues that we actually saw that we're trying to solve, talk about the scale that we are achieving with the underlying technologies that we're using. Okay, so let's look at the Adobe's Experience Cloud. Okay, as a whole, Experience Cloud applications are known in terms of, let's say, Analytics Cloud at the topmost layer here, which is Analytics, Audience Manager, which is a DMP solution. You have Marketing Cloud, which has solutions such as Campaign, which is email marketing solution, Marketo, B2B related marketing solution, Engage, Target, Experience Manager. You have Commerce Solutions, which are Magento. All these solutions are essentially known as an application layer. Right below this, you see the entire layer, which is the application services and the platform layer. Adobe's experience platform is something that was conceived over the last 4 years, and we've been working on it for the last 4 years. Today, it's large-scale platform available as a product and selling in the marketplace. It consists of some important components, such as real-time customer profile. This is going to be our focus area of discussion today. There's a lot of AI machine learning techniques that are actually getting used. This entire platform is built with the thinking of an open ecosystem, extensible data model, as well as complete microservices-based architecture. Now, the entire system has been built on top of cloud, their application services built, and this entire stack together is becoming the new generation of Adobe's Experience Cloud. Okay, now when we started looking at building Experience Cloud, the question was, okay, how we are looking at different challenges that marketers are actually facing. So let's look at the marketers' challenges that we're trying to kind of solve. If you start looking at the experience era, okay, the problem that we're looking at for solving the customer experience is that in the modern world today, every single thing gets driven out of how an enterprise is interacting with consumers. Their experience, their actually decides the long-term loyalty. And this is the long-term value that we're trying to go after. Now, to understand actually building this loyalty and providing the best experience, most important thing for a marketer is you must understand your consumer first. You must understand your customers completely. Okay, this is the 360 view of your customer that you need. A comprehensive view of your consumers or the customers is important. And it's not sufficient to simply say that I'm going to just take all this data coming from enterprise systems as well as interaction systems laid down in the data lake. That's not sufficient. So that becomes one of the important challenges. Next part is that as you start figuring out how to bring this data, the new world of activation, which is the word activation actually refers to how do you take this data and take actions to provide the experience to the consumer. This activation is more or less happening in real time. Today's scenarios is 100 milliseconds to 250 milliseconds is becoming more or less the norm in the industry, saying we must respond in this particular thing. And we will look at some of the use cases there. Now, this becomes the second challenge. The next one actually gets down to saying that it's not just about being real time. It's real time across every single channel that the customer is present. The channel here means your phone, your tablet, your laptop, all these are digital devices. A consumer or a customer could be present anywhere, and you must provide experience that is actually orchestrated well, which is understanding the user's behavior across all these channels, and providing experience becomes important. Now, this scale of data, if I try to bring together, I run into the next challenge, which is, hey, there is privacy regulations that are actually there everywhere. user consent becomes starts an important thing. I need to start thinking about the GDPR and related CCPA, these kind of regulations that are actually coming into play. So you need also a governance framework around this. So these were some of the kind of important challenges for the experience maker that we were looking at. And from this, we started looking at saying we need to build the experience platform. So let's look at the experience platform architecture at a high level. This is more like a marketecture view, okay? From the left-hand side, what I have is I have data sources that are trying to bring in the data. The data sources essentially are data such as interactional data. Interactional data is what happens on the web, what happens actually in your mobile devices, what happens, let's say transactional data. This could be coming from e-commerce, could be coming from brick and mortar, right? Operational data, the third-party data set, all these data is arriving in the system. Today's world, the data is coming more or less moving into everything, becoming streaming. Just-in-time data arrives and you're expected to take actions on it. But batch data still lives. This data, as it arrives in the system, next part is building essentially a data model. The system is built with a thinking that it's an extensible data model, more or less feels like a JSON structure with a schema, okay? And we call it XDM or the experience data model. This data model is flexible where any customer can adapt to their business needs. And we actually take all this data and convert. There's ETL processes as well as mapping that happens in real time and data gets collected. The data gets laid down in data lake for certain purposes as well starts moving into the next leg, which is the building the real-time customer profile. The profile building exercise has two different aspects to it. One is the profile and identity. And we separate the two things out. And I'll get into details of why the separation is needed. And both of these components heavily depend upon using Cosmos DB. And I'll actually talking about that. Then the part is that what kind of workloads the system actually starts supporting, which is profile lookup, segmentation, batch segmentation, real-time segmentation. There are many workloads that actually system needs to start supporting. This data goes to the next leg where we want to start building insights. So using the data lake, as well as using all the assets that have been laid down within Cosmos DB, we start looking at how I can start bringing insights. Insights come in terms of running simply queries, analytical and BI workloads, running data science, model operationalization kind of aspects. All these things bring together insights. Now what I have is I have profile, which is unified. I have insights, and now I take it to my activation points. Activation points is where I deliver my experience. This is where edge computing and many of these things start coming into play. And in the modern era, it's not just that I'm actually just taking the data there and taking actions. Streaming services require actually doing processing of the queries as events actually arrive, looking up the data from the profile and acting on it, and then delivering actually the experience to the customer right on the time. Okay, let's get to the next level of details with respect to profile and identity and why this is actually becoming important, okay, for the marketing use cases as well as reporting use cases. So in the marketing, I think many of you guys are already aware, marketing use cases come out in many different ways. There is definitely personalization that is actually happening in web and mobile and in-app and all these things, which is what I look at a personalization systems is that an incoming request, it's actually segmented. All the audience is segmented into a large set of users. And that set sees more or less the same exact experience. That is generally called a personalization. Now, set size can vary, but we have seen set sizes getting into 10 million to 100 million users falling into single set, which is essentially you're not doing much personalization. Okay, as you get this set smaller and smaller, personalization actually goes. Yeah, higher and higher. Now, this is happening today, whether it's happening in the email marketing, it's happening in push notifications, or it's happening on the inbound channels. Interaction is kind of a new kind of thing. If I were to say that personalization is actually unimodal, it's either inbound or it is outbound, but it's not both at the same time. Interaction is bimodal. And we are seeing a whole lot of interaction that is happening. And I'll tell you a few examples of what interaction actually means. Interaction has one more characteristic. It is about one individual. So it becomes personalization to the next level, which is a segment size of one are fully individualized. Where do you see interactions? My most recent experience actually walking into DMV was very, very thrilling. You know that in DMV, you will just completely waste your time just actually standing in lines. this was a situation where everything happened completely with devices, where I was not standing anywhere physically in line. My actual work within DME was 5 minutes, walk to the counter, get the job done, get out. Everything happened through devices. And there was a continuous interaction from my phone into the system, starting initially from my browser, then from the phone, and everything actually worked out. Now, this is happening in government offices. I've seen this in libraries. Library checkouts have actually changed. You're seeing this happening in enterprises. You're seeing this happening in retail, right? Buying online and picking up in store is one of those interactional examples you're actually seeing. You're seeing that happening in the food industry. You're seeing in hospitals. So you're seeing this happening pretty much everywhere. And COVID environment has pushed it into high gear. And much of this requires almost instantaneous response. You cannot wait. So these are becoming two dominant examples. The next example is really reporting, which is where you're trying to kind of, reporting is kind of a broader title, but really pulling analytics together, BI, attribution. These are kind of use cases which require full understanding of single consumer or a customer and their identities. Now let's look at the details of the problems with respect to identities and profile. So here is kind of the view of the world I'm going to kind of talk about. Let's consider this is my picture, poorly drawn picture of Sandeep, okay, the consumer. You are essentially looking at his interactions actually in all different devices and different places. You have essentially a phone, you have a tablet, you have a computer that you're interacting with. There's a brick and mortar interaction. He's talking to a customer service representative. Every single place, there is an identity. There's a primary key, if you were to think about database people like us, right? There is a primary key that we are actually talking about. And this primary key essentially is like IDFA, the cookie actually, or the CRM ID. These identities exist. And each one is different, okay? Now let's look at the part of saying that, okay, well, how does the data actually start coming together? Each channel in this case has its own data bucket. I call the fragment of that profile for Sandeep. Okay, this fragment actually exists and it has one primary key associated with it, but any one fragment is a partial understanding of what Sandeep's actual profile looks like. So what is needed is that I need a way to bring all this thing together into a single view. Okay, so first part is that we're separating the picture, saying that there are these fragments where the data resides for this particular consumer. And there are identities, okay? These identities are actually just there across different channels. So now let's look at the next picture, which is how do we actually bring it together, okay? So once we actually start look, bringing it together, if you start thinking about it, all these identities are getting related to each other, okay? Identity relationship with each other, you can think about like I'm forming a graph of these identities. This is the identity graph. This needs to be built. Now, once you build the identity graph, that actually tells the profile how to bring together fragments. These are logically brought together. They're not physically brought together, which means that as the graph evolves, as things change, you can actually start bringing together profiles. And now I have a one single view of this particular consumer. Sandeep's profile is actually underserved from a given use case perspective. Now, if you start thinking about what is happening behind this, because you're bringing these identities together, every enterprise needs to start thinking about how to bring this together. And if you want to understand your consumer well, which is the imperative for the experience era, then you must understand the identities. You must bring it together. This is almost balance sheet worthy, actually, asset that any enterprise can build. And this is becoming extremely important. And we are noticing every customer of Adobe actually is looking at saying, how does identities actually work in this new world? Now, let's take to now. Now we know how the profile comes together. Let's look at the next level of details on the profile architecture. So this is essentially just a conceptual view of now how the profile is going to start coming together. From the left-hand side, I'm showing the profile fragments. Okay, the profile fragments is what I talked about, a single-minded view of saying that a single identity gives you a single part of data. So web will have its own container of data. Every interactional event collected from the web will be sitting in that container. Mobile will have similar same thing. All the CRM data will be sitting inside one container. These containers essentially bring together the data using the identity, okay, an identity graph that we stitch together, we will bring together all the data on the profile. That is becomes the story of saying, I got a unified view of the profile. This actually starts falling under the governance controls. And now I need to start talking about what use cases I'm going to start supporting on top of this. Okay. So as we start looking at the use cases part of it, simple use cases is I need to provide point lookup. Point lookup is needed in many, many use cases, which is starting with simple like customer support applications or any high touch application needs to see the customer's profile as the simplest part of it. Even data science workspace or any data science or modeling exercise time to run need to see it. User interfaces need to kind of look at a point lookup. Point lookup means that on the fly, figure out what the graphs look are going to come together like, as well figure out what the different fragments are and put together a view of a person at that point in time. Okay, so it's a very complicated query, although it looks like a simple point lookup. Okay, next part is that batch segmentation. Batch segmentation means running a large number of queries on a periodic basis. Number of actually queries that actually run against this kind of a database actually gets into, for a single enterprise, into tens of thousands of queries actually run. And that is run in a batch model, which means that you're running on a periodic basis. But in the modern world, they also need to be run in a streaming world. Okay, real-time world. Now here where the application starts getting very stringent, you have less than 100 milliseconds to run queries. So for an incoming single event, okay, you have to look up this profile, which is a complex query, and run 10,000 plus queries against all this data set, okay, and actually materialize the query results. You have about 100 milliseconds, and this is for one event. Typical enterprise actually will get hundreds of thousands of events actually arriving every single second. So think about the database load characteristics that they're trying to create in this one. You have hundreds of thousands of events. For each event, 10,000 queries actually need to be run. And the multiplication of two is the workload in terms of query execution needs to be run on top of this particular system. Now, these kind of scales, when you're looking at it, of course, one has to get to some of the fundamentals in computer science, saying query execution in a standard model, such as like you're running simply Spark, okay, running a SQL and window-based queries. That's not actually a workable model. You can't run 10,000 queries per second across 100,000 events, each one arriving and actually give 100 milliseconds. So there's a lot of work that is done at some base level understanding of saying how query execution can be modulated and completely changing the tack from some either SQL-oriented query execution or even text search-oriented query execution to a different world we call the query indexing technologies. Okay. Now, all these things together, along with the underlying database, allows us now to start to get to saying that we can actually start supporting scale. Okay. Now, given this much of a background information on what is happening, let's look at the next level of details on the architecture. So now we look going to start looking at the architecture of profile as well as identity. So this particular architecture, as you're starting to look at, has been divided into two different parts. Streaming world as well as batch world. There's a lot of similarities between profile and identity, as you will start noticing. From the left-hand side, as I was talking about, there is essentially data that is actually coming into the system. The data that comes is from the interactional systems, typically real-time data collection. We call the data collection service DCS. This is a box where all the data actually arrives. This is streaming data collections. Now, once the data actually starts arriving, we are using Apache Flink and actually trying to do streaming graph compute on top of this. Aided by Redis, Redis is being used as more like a cache that is needed for some other computation. But the results of all this information means we are continuously making updates into Cosmos DB, where actually the graph will be stored. Similarly, from the batch, you have ETL processes that are actually running. Incoming data is actually transformed, laid down into Azure Data Lake. These are essentially Parquet files where we are actually laying down the data. On top of that, we are running Spark-based graph compute jobs. These graph compute jobs essentially are computing as the data arrives, and the data gets again put into graph updates into Cosmos DB. So this entire use case starts looking like Cosmos DB being used for graph computation and running graph API on top of it. And we'll look at the scale at which these systems are actually running. Once you have a graph compute that is actually in place, the next layer of this one actually starts looking at the APIs that are actually supported. As I mentioned, the entire system has been built as API-first system. So APIs are continuously accessing, and you have to understand that level of scale at which the APIs have to run is that a graph lookup has to happen every single time that I'm either running a query, okay, or I'm actually doing a point lookup, or I'm running a batch segmentation jobs, I need to do lookups on the Cosmos DB, which is the graph needs to be looked up. So the scale at which these runs are extremely heavy on Cosmos DB, and we're running actually at fairly large scale. I'll show you some of the numbers and the scales at which systems are running. This data eventually then gets used by Unified Profile, and this is where the overall view construction of the profile actually starts. Let's look at also corresponding to the next slide, the architecture of a profile. Very similar looking architecture on two sides, and the symmetry is natural here if you start thinking about it, because the data that is going into profile, the data that is going into identity, they are kind of same data sets. They're really not different data sets that are going two different places. The purpose and the computations that they do on the same data set is very different from each other. So what goes into the underlying data store is very different. So in case of profile, again, at the top level, you have same data collection happening through DCS, the data collection service. Underlying, we are, of course, using Kafka-based pipeline, and this is where the actual ingestion happens. Now, in case of profile, however, every event that actually happens in user's history is recorded and stored in the profile, okay? So every web visit you make, everything that you do inside your in-app, everything that happens in the store, that information is recorded for that enterprise in their customer consumer profile. And essentially, we call this as a time series data. So if you start looking at it, the transactions here is that incoming data maps into an ETL, ETL conversion happens, and that data essentially goes into UPS. A single event will result into multiple updates happening or multiple transactions that are happening against Cosmos. We'll look at the scale. Okay, the batch ingestion actually has a little bit more complexities because you're running an entire ETL pipeline, you're talking to catalog services, then the data gets laid down to Azure Data Lake, which is Parquet files. We run compute jobs on top of that, which is based on Spark. You can see again the symmetry there, similar things are happening on both sides. This is where batch hydration actually happens. We use the term hydration to mean load data into the profile. It's a pipeline and there's a profile, so you're just hydrating the profile. That's the terminology we use. Once the data is actually in the profile, this is where the next set of loads, workload starts coming into play. The workloads here are essentially about, as I talked about, a periodic query execution, which we call the baseline segmentation or the batch segmentation jobs that are actually running. Steaming segmentation, this is this extreme heavy load that are running every single second with a very high influx of events. And then once this data is actually continuously computed, you're computing audience sets, audience membership, audience payloads, getting them ready for the experience business part of it, which is ready for the applications. And these applications, you have essentially APIs. Again, this system is based on a microservices API kind of architecture. And the export jobs essentially provide data for taking care of operational workloads as well as analytical workloads. Because remember, another thing that this particular database now has to take care of, which is the stitching component that we're putting together, one single view of customer, is important even in the insights world, which is where reporting, query processing, data science, et cetera, is playing, and they need this particular view to be continuously exported. So we are also not only hydrating on one end, we are also on the continuous end exporting the data. And this is, again, one of the speakers was talking about CDCs. System heavily internally uses CDCs to kind of keep on hydrating the data on the outbound side into data lake on a continuous basis while at the same time ingesting data. Let's look at now the scale characteristics of the system. So before that, let's look at the tech stack itself. As one of the speakers again said, we are not a .NET kind of shop. We are, again, a Java, Scala kind of a shop. And it has been perfectly fine working with Azure as well as Cosmos DB. No problem of working with Java and Scala. Everything has been actually wonderful all along. Our processing, essentially, we're using Spark Databricks as well as the AWS EMR for the legacy reasons. Apache Flink actually is getting used. I showed you a couple of places. Clouds, we are dominantly actually most of the structure that I actually kind of showed you here is based on Azure. For the legacy reasons, we still have a lot of AWS presence. We're using all the Kubernetes stack. And the database side, Cosmos DB gets used majorly. The flavors we are using is not Cassandra or Mongo today. We are straight away using the native Cosmos DB. And there is we are finding actually the scale with which it's running as well as the reliability that it has provided has been enormous for us. Postgres Redis does get used quite a bit for smaller applications. Redis is mostly being the cache kind of applications. Now let's look at the scale actually at which the systems are running. So these are the scales as our customers, enterprise customers are seeing. Okay, these are not the scales at which the Cosmos DB transactions run. Individual events here result into large number of transactions against the Cosmos DB, and there's a multiplier effect that actually comes into play. Typically, the incoming streaming ingestion today runs at about 7.5 billion events. We have 2.5 billion events actually that are getting ingested on a continuous basis. This results into graph updates. Graph updates is a very complex actually computation as well, large number of transactions and updates that happen against the database. And today, the graph database is a relatively small database, about 40 terabytes with 11 billion essentially clusters and 30 billion identities. Now, let's look at the similar scale exactly going towards the profile. So on the next slide, we show essentially the scale for profile. Now, ingestion events, as you can see, is exactly the same. The number is not going to change from looking at the profile. However, storage scale-wise, we're looking at a single account has a 200 terabytes of data actually sitting in the system with almost 5,000 plus partitions. There are 12.5 billion profiles actually located across 600 terabytes of data. We are actually handling 50 billion point lookups in a given day. Okay, we are actually handling peak loads for a single enterprise in excess of 400,000 requests per second. At this rate, we are running queries against the system. So this has been a great kind of exercise for us to work with Microsoft. I just want to kind of conclude here right now. Just let's look at some of this presentation and information. I've not been able to get into details, but there's a lot of publications and blogs available. I'm reachable at LinkedIn here, as well as some of these blogs are actually available on Adobe site. And any of you are interested in actually seeing more details behind this, because there are a lot of subjects I briefly just touched upon. But I would be happy to get into details. But I want to stop there for any questions.
Thank you, Sandeep. It was really amazing to drill down into Adobe's infrastructure and understand that with your help how Adobe is running that infrastructure at scale. We have one question from one of our viewers asking, how did Cosmos DB's specific characteristics help in building this unified view that you have just described?
The specific characteristics, I mean, I will tell you from a more simple operational aspect, we were looking at essentially database as a service. Instant scalability was extremely important portion for us. So I just want to talk about what kind of scalability patterns that we see when a bad job actually basically starts. So let's say I have an email campaign or a burst mode campaign that needs to run. The system is running at actually for that enterprise at a scale zero, literally no transactions happening with respect to query processing. And then instantly for next 3 minutes, I need to pump 10 million a minute actually emails. And each email, that number may look small, but each email requires several lookups, several transactions and changes that are happening in the database. And you are moving from the zero to extreme scales at an extremely fast rate. So think about this kind of workloads, which is dynamic characteristics of the workloads are actually continuously changing. We needed a scale characteristics that can actually move so fast based on how things are actually coming in. I talked about this aspect where we have a continuous load that comes in. Now that's a stable load. When I say a few 100,000 hits per second that is actually arriving, this is the data that's getting actually ingested and stored. Again, large number of transactions continuously running. So stable load characteristics managing that extremely well, right? Then, as I talked about, the other aspect that is important for us is that the underlying architecture itself is the architecture of the system is based on this notion of fragments and the graphs and how the data comes together. It's not a SQL-oriented architecture, right? Although we run queries that look like more or less a straight SQL, we are actually doing joins and all kinds of time series data processing. The underlying data layer had to be done in a very different manner. And that actually required us a document-oriented kind of thinking. So many different flavors that Cosmos DB supports became extremely important for us. Then the partitioning structure underneath. I mean, I talked about saying that we have 5,000 partitions for one single customer. This ability to kind of actually dynamically scale up the RUs and get to a point saying, I can lay down my RUs. And we think in this way, which is, I need ability to run, let's say, 1 terabyte a minute IO against the entire system in a scan job. Ability to get there becomes very important. Now, this particular thing may look very simple, a scan job at 1 terabyte a minute. However, with HDFS, it was not possible to get there. There were initial trials we did. So I think there were many of these considerations that actually kind of started getting us towards using Cosmos DB. And this was early in 2017, 2018, but has been a very wonderful journey for us.
That makes sense. I think it's just mind-blowing to understand at which scale you are operating your whole platform and how Cosmos DB fits into that platform. Thanks again, Sandeep, for joining the conference today. Thanks for taking the time to share all of that very precious information with us. Next, and just before we switch to our next speaker, we have a quick video to show you, and Tim has more details.
Thank you.